Amina Lipman,
Aaron,
left her home in Memelsdorf, Bavaria in 1863, came to the United States, was, I believe, in New York for a while, how long, I do not know. Her brother, Abraham Lipman, lived in Pittsburgh, and whether she had come to Pittsburgh before she met my grandfather, or whether my grandfather met her through her brother and met her in New York, I do not know.
Do you have any idea of her approximate birth date?
Yes, she was born February 6, 1841.
You spoke of Philip Hamburger, and his business here was what?
I don't know the details of his business career. He was at one time in the distilling business, in the business known as Philip Hamburger and Company. But he had retired from that business before the days of my memory, so I can't tell you too much about it.
Okay. Did he ever tell you, or had you heard from any other member of the family, what his apprenticeship was in Germany?
I assume in a mercantile business, but I do not know.
Did he belong to any civic or social institutions?
As to the civic institutions, I don't know. He was a trustee of Rhoda Scholem congregation for something like 40 years, or for most of 40 years, until his death in 1921. What other organizations he belonged to, I don't know. I mean, locally he belonged to the Concordia Club as a social organization, but I can't give you much more information about his organizational activity because I don't know.
Was he one of the founders of the Concordia Club?
I don't know when the Concordia Club was founded, so I don't know. My grandfather came to Pittsburgh in 1867, and what the relationship to the Concordia Club was, I have any idea. Except that he belonged to it for years, and the picture right here was a picture painted for the Concordia Club. He had been chairman of their building committee for the building of their clubhouse in Oakland.
You've often told us that you rode the Transcontinental Railroad in your existence. Was there any reason for that short public adventure and curiosity?
I believe that a member of the Hanauer family was living in Salt Lake City at that time. At any rate, a brother of my great-grandfather Hanauer, who was also the uncle of my grandfather Hamburger, had moved from Columbia, Pennsylvania on the Susquehanna to Salt Lake City, and there was a branch of the family there. Now, whether that came before or after this trip of my grandfather's at the time the Union Pacific was first built, I do not know.
Could you tell us what was the work that Meyer Hanauer did in Pittsburgh?
In one of the old city directories, he is described as a merchant tailor, whatever that means.
We were wondering if you could tell us what social clubs you and your father were members of.
Father belonged both to the Concordia Club and to the Westmoreland Country Club. I used to belong to Westmoreland Country Club, but that was good many years ago.
Did either you or your father use the facilities of these clubs?
Well, father played golf, and as a youngster I played golf, and I also played tennis. Use the tennis courts.
Could you remember when your family got a car? what kind it might be?
The automobile, first family automobile was given to my grandfather and grandmother, Aaron, for their 40th wedding anniversary in 1906. It was a 1907 Packard car.
Who drove that car?
They had a driver.
As a young boy, how did you get around town in Pittsburgh?
Sometimes, frequently on foot, also in the streetcar, and also by automobile occasion.
What was your parents' mode of transportation to get back and forth to their activities?
Streetcars, trains, I suppose once upon a time horses and carriages were in the days of automobiles, but all that is pretty much in the dim and distant past.
Did your father drive?
No, he didn't.
When you think back at your home as a young boy, could you tell us who did the housework in your home?
Well, the mother had the assistance of houseworkers.
And how many did she supervise?
I would say it might have been a cook, a chambermaid, a nurse or governess for the youngsters, and also someone to do the laundry.
Do you happen to remember where the help came from? Did they come from various parts of the Pittsburgh area or one particular part?
I can't answer that question. I don't know.
Can you compare for us the household help of your young days with the household help that you had throughout your life as a married man and as a father?
I'm afraid the ladies of the family will have to answer questions like that.
Was there help in your home as you were raising your children?
Yes.
And it was sufficient to keep the household running?
We hope.
I wonder if we could switch now to talking about Lewis Aaron, who bought into the Homer Laughlin Works. This was about what year? When did this happen?
December 7th, 1897.
Could you now tell us who was the classmate of Stella Aaron, who helped organize the National League of Girls Clubs that you spoke of in our previous interview?
Miss Jean Hamilton.
Now let's jump to...
Who was a friend of the family until her death.
And she lived for quite a while, didn't she?
She lived longer than my mother did.
When you were in Sunday school, could you tell us who taught you and who stands out in your mind as one of your finer teachers?
Well, the greatest of all teachers was Dr. J. Leonard Levy.
Now, didn't he just teach the confirmation class?
Personally, he taught the confirmation class, yes, but that was the crowning and outstanding year of the whole religious school experience. There were others who taught. I remember all of them, but Dr. Levy was so far and away the finest that there is no comparison.
Was Hebrew part of your curriculum when you were going to religious school?
It was not part of the curriculum, but I had the benefit of private Hebrew instruction from my grandfather, my grandfather Aaron. Was deeply interested in Hebrew and was one of the founders of the Hebrew Institute of Pittsburgh. But unfortunately, I never went far enough with the Hebrew to become an accomplished Hebraist. Dr. Levy introduced the teaching of Hebrew into the school, but for a later class. I was in the last class that he lived to confirm. He taught for the next year's confirmation class. And some of the those who were in the younger classes had the benefit of Hebrew instruction in the religious school.
Did young men and women in the days when you were going through religious school look forward to and like going to religious school?
I can't speak for anybody else. I know that the temple was very much a part of my life experience.
Then I wonder if we can talk for a bit about your relationship with the temple. Once you stopped being a student, did you assume the role of a teacher?
While I was still in my student years, I joined the congregation as a junior member. During my years at the Harvard Law School, I taught at Temple Israel in Boston. And when I came back to Pittsburgh in 1923, I taught at the Temple Religious School for 3 years.
And what subjects did you teach?
In Pittsburgh, I taught the confirmation class in a course in comparative religion, and I also dealt with that same subject in a post-confirmation class.
And what did you teach in Boston?
In Boston, 1 year I taught a course in Jewish history, Jewish History Through Great Personalities. A book by Adele Bildersee was the textbook that we used. I have it on the shelf in the next room. And another year I taught a younger class, not particularly to my satisfaction, perhaps not to the satisfaction of the youngsters. But the 1 year that I taught that Builder's Aid book was a very gratifying year in Boston.
I wonder now if we could think for a while about your years as president of the congregation, and if you could outline for us the changes in policy that you saw as you served.
That's a difficult question, one that I'm not sure that I'm prepared to answer. I think we tried to carry on the same policy that had made the congregation what it was. A policy of encouraging wide and constantly widening circle of membership, of attempting to bring members of the congregation into the work of the congregation, service on committees, service on the board. A change was made during the time that I was president of the congregation to require a rotation on the temple board. That was a policy with which I did not find myself fundamentally in agreement. It seemed to me that it was more worthwhile to retain those members of the board who were most useful to the congregation without forcing them off the board because they had served X number of years. But the opposite view prevailed, and the present system involves a mandatory rotation.
You touched upon how Rabbi Friedhoff got selected as our rabbi. Are there any details that you feel for future historians that you want to add at this point?
I think Dr. Friedhoff has established his own position in the community in such a way that it is quite obvious that his selection was more than amply justified. I think he is recognized over the country as one of the outstanding rabbinic scholars and preachers in the American pulpit.
We are interested in how you see the different rabbis influencing the congregation. Have previously told us about Rabbi Levy and Rabbi Goldenson, and have just now began to touch on Rabbi Friedhoff's influence. Is there any additional item that you can think of that we can point to as a cornerstone of Rabbi Friedhoff's influence on either our congregation or Pittsburgh itself?
Well, Dr. Friedhoff has devoted a large part of his effort over the years to the preparation of written works. And in the long run, he has established his position in the American Jewish rabbinate as one of the most prolific of writers from the standpoint of Reform Judaism. So I think that one can very definitely say that not only did he establish a reputation as a preacher and as a scholar during the lifetime of those who knew him during his active ministry, but his books are likely to continue to carry the message of his special approach to Judaism. And there he has found a very special interest in the work in the field of responsive, on an attempt to apply from the standpoint of Reform Judaism the rabbinic tradition of deciding questions on the basis of precedent and Jewish law.
As you look back upon your role with Rode of Sholem, as well as our rabbi's role, and we look at the impact or involvement either you or the rabbis had in politics, the war, depression, prohibition, and so forth. Can you draw for us a picture of the involvement and the viewpoints taken on these issues?
I don't think I can answer that question while tape was running against me. No.
Can we just take maybe one item as our focus? Let's take the 1939-1941 years. Can you paint a picture for us as we look at what was happening in Europe? Can you brief us on what was happening in our congregation and our reaction to what was going on in Europe at that time?
Well, I think the congregation was intensely aware of the danger to Jews and Judaism involved in the Nazi movement in Germany, and the widening power and threat that Adolf Hitler posed to the Jews of the European continent and the world. And I think there was the effort during those years to do what we could to help those who could escape from Germany to find a new life in this country. I would say that that was more largely on an individual basis than it was on the basis of congregational activity. On the other hand, the Hebrew Union College was very helpful in bringing a number of outstanding Jewish scholars to Cincinnati to teach, giving them the opportunity to teach and to create a new life and to carry on their work of scholarship in this country. So that to some extent the effort was through organizations, to some extent through the efforts of individuals in the congregation and otherwise in the congregations.
And then in the 40s, during the war years, would you say that similar activities occurred?
Well, even during the early war years, it was possible, through the cooperation of the United States government, to bring refugees from Germany, who had succeeded in escaping from Germany, to bring them to this country. And I know some came in those years.
Then, once the war was over, look to the early years of the establishment of the State of Israel. Can you comment for us on the reaction of various members of the congregation, or even your own reaction to what evolved after the close of the Second World War?
Well, I would say the congregation, the membership of the congregation became increasingly Zionist oriented. I, for one, have never been a Zionist, have never seen in a country in that geographic location the ultimate haven of refuge. I have been impressed all my drawn life with the point of view taken by Professor Morris Jastrow, Jr., in a book called Zionism and the Future of Palestine. The picture that he painted of Palestine as the crossroads of competing empires in the ancient world and as an almost untenable location. I may be more pessimistic than those who are more enthusiastic about Zionism than I am, but I have been unfortunately reminded that what Professor Jastrow said has proved to be only too true. That there is a country caught between Egypt and Babylon in the ancient days, Egypt and Assyria in the ancient days, is equally caught between Syria and Egypt, Jordan and whatnot. But I don't want to argue that.
I wonder if now we could talk about your business and professional life, and if you might comment on your relationship with your colleagues or your employees throughout these years.
Well, as far as my professional life is concerned, I was admitted to the bar in 1923. I was not able to practice because family business seemed to require my participation, and I have been involved in that business ever since. I don't know that I can comment on relationship with the employees. because I have lived in Pittsburgh all these years and the business has been in another community, and consequently my contact with the rank and file of workers has not been as close as it would be if I lived in the same community. But I have had very gratifying associations with those with whom I have been associated.
Is it an ever-changing employee pool, or do they tend to stay with the company?
We have a great many employees who have been working for Homer Laughlin through most of their adult lives. We've had a remarkably large percentage of older workers, which is proof that they did remain. I would say that in today's world, and with the mobility of population, that is less the case than it used to be, and the turnover among newer employees is constantly going.
In your China company, are the employees unionized?
The business has been unionized. It was unionized before the family ever got into the business. Been operating under a collective bargaining system between the United States Potters Association and what used to be called the National Brotherhood of Operative Potters, now is called the International Brotherhood of Pottery and Allied Workers, AFL-CIO. And the workers are all members of the union except office personnel, technical personnel, and so on.
Now, do people who run potteries get together for conventions or meetings?
The United States Potters Association has meetings, and it used to be a fairly large organization. Now there are only a handful of potteries left that belong to that organization. But there is an organization, and they do carry it, yes.
Do you ever attend any of their meetings?
I have not been attending the meetings. I attended one once many years ago, and I have left that branch of activity to my associates.
Has the Potters Association decreased in size because the organization has fallen apart, or because there are fewer American potteries?
There are fewer American potteries, chiefly. And there are a few American potteries that are not members of the United States Potters Association. Many potteries that used to exist in the tri-state area, western Pennsylvania, northern West Virginia, and eastern Ohio, a great many of them have simply vanished from the scene.
Could you describe for us your specific role at the pottery?
I could describe it as having to do what needed to be done, whatever it happened to be, whether it involved sweeping out or something more useful.
Is part of what you do the design of the items that are turned out, the choosing
no,
of colors?
I have not been in the creative work of the pottery at all.
So your duties are...
I worked at one time in the laboratory and went through something of an apprenticeship there, but that was for relatively brief part of the time, and most of my time has been involved in laborious, unimaginative office work.
So it would be safe to say that yours has been the administrative end?
I guess that would be giving it a nice name.
I wonder if we could talk for a moment about the health of you as a boy and a young man, and the medical care that was available to you and your family.
Well, I would say that we had good medical care.
Were there any major illnesses that either you or your family had during those years?
Well, I think I went through a fair range of childhood illnesses, measles, chicken pox, German measles, whatnot. But fortunately, no desperately serious illness.
And the same was true for your parents, that there were no major illnesses?